Welcome to Exploring Bible Prophecy with our host and teacher, Steve Butler. Today, our study is in the chronological series of end time events. Let's open our Bibles and prepare to explore Bible prophecy.
Hello, and welcome once again to Exploring Bible Prophecy. In today's program, we're going to continue to explore the scriptures that are part of the introduction to our current teaching series entitled Chronological Sequence of End Time Events. And if you've been with us for any period of time in the past, you know that we're going to be going over 30 specific events that have yet to take place that are listed in God's holy word. They are events of the end times. And I say the events of the end times with confidence here because there are no events that are that come with signs. It's a signless event, and that is the rapture of the church. And of course, we'll get into that in point number two and explain that with the scriptures, that it is the next event, but it is signless. It's the next event. And then from then on, all of the end time events are easily recognized in the Bible if you do some research, and can fairly easily be put in a chronological sequence all the way from the rapture of the church once it happens to what we call the beginning of eternity once again. And I say the beginning of eternity because there was an eternity past, if you will, that was planned. Now, I'm not saying that the world was around for billions of years. I certainly don't believe that because I'm a biblicist and I believe the earth is only approximately 6,000 years because that's what the Bible says, and I believe the Bible. But I want to make clear that God had a plan for eternity, which we discussed at the very beginning of our introduction back in Genesis chapter 1, verse 31, when he completed the six 24-hour days of creation, and he looked on his creation, including mankind, and said, "It is very good." He meant that it is sinless. It is without death or illness or anything that you can imagine associated with the trials and tribulations of today. So he had planned for a perfect eternity with mankind on the earth. Obviously, we learn from Ezekiel 28 there in our handout, our worksheet, where it describes Satan, that Satan fell from grace when he was Lucifer, when he was one of the chief angels. He fell from his relationship with God the Father, became Satan, and then came to the earth and caused mankind to fall away from God as well into unrighteousness. And that's what the last 6,000 years have all been about. But we do know because we've read the last chapter of the last book of God's word that we know that this will all come full circle. It will all come full circle at the end of Revelation when he brings mankind back into a perfect state as it was with Adam and Eve. And then we will go on into eternity from there because the one who had caused the fall, Satan, will have been cast into what is called the lake of fire forever and ever, never to torment mankind again and to bring sin because he is the father of sin. So to establish the point once again that we are between the initial intent for eternity and then the final completion of the 7,000 years, which will bring about eternity again. So a complete circle. Sometimes we call it between the trees, the tree of life and the garden at the beginning and the tree of life in the New Jerusalem that the people of the earth can access for eternity afterwards. But the point is we're dealing with what is now 6,000 of the 7,000 years have already passed, and we're coming to the end of that 6,000th period of time. We're in what's called the church age. But back in Genesis, when Satan fell and he caused man to be corrupted, God punished Satan and he gave them a very clear warning and a prophecy about his future. And that was found in Genesis 3:15. And I really believe Genesis 3:15 is one of the core verses in the entire Bible if you want to understand God's plan and how it flows from Genesis to Revelation. Because in Genesis 3:15, when God is talking to Satan, He says, I will put enmity between you and the woman, and the woman is unidentified, and between your seed and her seed. He shall bruise you on the head, and you shall bruise him on the heel. And of course, it's talking about what ultimately is Mary, and because she has Christ through what's called the Immaculate Conception, because it's not, remember, the seed does not come through the woman, it comes through the man. So this is the Immaculate Conception. So we're ultimately talking about Jesus. But remember, we learned back in Ezekiel chapter 28 that Satan is a created being. He is a created entity like you and I are. He is not godlike. He did not, he's not of God. He was created by God. And consequently, and the reason for saying this really over and over again is to make sure we understand that Satan is a entity that, while very powerful, can only be in one place at one time, and he does not have the omniscience of God. He does not see into the future like God does. So when he sees this in Genesis 3:15, he's obviously, his mind, if you will, looking at it from a human perspective, his mind is just cranking. Now, what does all this mean to me? Obviously, this woman is bad news. I'm going to have to figure out who this woman is, and I need to stop her from having this seed come to life. In other words, whoever this person is that's going to come from this woman, God says, is going to kill me. So obviously, I want to stop this from happening. So that is really an underlying theme, if you will, all the way through the Bible, through the Old Testament into the New Testament, is to understand that Satan is constantly and has been for 6,000 years looking for, who is this woman? How do I cut off this bloodline so that perhaps this woman doesn't even come to existence? And for sure, I don't want her seed to come to fruition, because God says he will kill me. I'll have the opportunity to harm him in some way, to bruise him on the heel, which is a direct reference to crucifixion, but we know what happens there, the glorious resurrection. So that's the theme, and through that theme is developed the point that God is going to work through a specific people over time, starting with Abraham, and they're called the Israelites. So God, whatever you may think about him, it doesn't make any difference, because God chose the Israelites to be his chosen people to do his work, and he will work through them in almost every case in the Bible to bring about the end of his purposes and to bring about the eternity that we talk about at the end of Revelation. And if you understand that, you can see how all of this is going to flow as we go through these 30 points, that the seed that this woman will bear is the seed of Abraham. And we learned that in Genesis 12, verses 1 through 3, that you see on your worksheet. And then it was confirmed again in Galatians in the New Testament, chapter 3, verses 8 and 9, that this is a seed, and through that seed, the world is going to be blessed. But we also want to make the point that it's not just going to be blessed through Jesus, which is the primary blessing, but it also says, and we went to Zechariah 8 to point that out, that through the Jews, through Israel, the world would be blessed. And initially, if they had obeyed God and followed his commandments from the beginning, they would have been a blessing to the world 3,000 years ago. But because they turned their back constantly over and over again, and that's the theme of the Old Testament particularly, they turned their backs on God. God kept his covenant. He did not cast them off, but he delayed when this blessing would take place. And what this blessing in Zechariah 8, 11 through 13 is about is the millennial kingdom. The millennial kingdom, when Israel is in the land again, fully saved, fully blessed, and being the preeminent nation in the world to bring the gospel to the world during the millennial kingdom. And we went further to establish that foundation about Israel by going to Exodus 6, which you saw. And those are those seven wonderful I wills that God said relative to his people Israel, that he basically, during those seven I wills, gave the entire historical outline of his dealings with Israel all the way up to the millennial kingdom. So those seven I wills in Exodus 6, again, are foundational pieces of information that we need to remember. And then in Exodus 19, he marries Israel. So Israel becomes his wife. He refers to her as to him as her husband several times in the Old Testament, and that she is the wife, although she is an adulterous wife, meaning that she turns to idols. And then, of course, in 20, he gives Israel the Ten Commandments by which they might live, being his wife, so that we related that in our last program as being sanctification. Here are the guidelines for sanctification, becoming more and more righteous before God. Then we went into Deuteronomy 7, where we again reestablished the point that Israel was the chosen people of Israel, and that he would bless them forever, and that he would go against anybody who was against Israel, that was therefore against God, and he would judge them to their face quickly. And then finally, we went through chapter 28 of Deuteronomy, and that was the blessings, verses 1 through 14, the blessings that God promised to Israel in a covenant promise, the things that he would bless Israel with if they would obey him. And this wasn't a case of, okay, I'm going to let you go, I'm going to test you, let's see how you do, and if you fail, I cast you off into oblivion forever. That's not God. That is not the character of God. God's character is, I'm a covenant-keeping God. I've promised that I would do these things. I promised them to your forefathers. I'm promising them to you, and I will fulfill them. It may not be until the millennial kingdom, but he will fulfill them. And preeminent among those blessings, as you recall in Deuteronomy 28:1, was that Israel would become the preeminent nation on the earth. And later on in those blessings, he says that all the other nations of the earth would reverentially respect Israel. It actually says would be afraid of, but would reverentially respect Israel. So hopefully, having established that our focus is on Israel and Satan's relationship with a specific line or a specific seed, I now want to take you in today's program to an Old Testament book. You have 1 and 2 Samuel, and we want to go to 1 Samuel. So if you go in your book, we've been in Exodus, and we've been in Deuteronomy. We finished up in Deuteronomy last time, so let's go on past Deuteronomy to Joshua and then Judges, and then an ancient, really wonderful short book called Ruth, and then you get into Samuel. And just as a quick backdrop, when the Israelites came out of Egypt, they were in the wilderness for 40 years, waiting for that first generation who remained idol worshipers to die as a punishment. The second generation came into the land of Canaan, which would become Israel, and they conquered most of the land, not all of the land, and that's another story in and of itself. And then following that, the people tended to really fall back away from God, so God established what were called the judges, and the judges existed for about 350 years or so in the history of Israel. And that brings us to 1 Samuel chapter 8. 1 Samuel chapter 8, and this is the very end of the judges. And let's see what happened here, because this is very significant to our understanding of the scriptures going forward from here. 1 Samuel chapter 8, verse 1, and it came about when Samuel was old. He was the last of the judges. When Samuel was old, that he appointed his sons judges over Israel. Now the name of his first son was Joel, and the name of his second son Abijah, and they were judging in Beersheba. His sons, however, did not walk in his ways. Now remember, Samuel was a very righteous man. They did not walk in his ways, but turned aside after dishonest gain, and took bribes and perverted justice. Then the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah. And they said to him, "Behold," speaking to Samuel, "you have grown old, and your sons do not walk in your ways. Now appoint a king for us to judge us like all the nations. But the thing was displeasing in the sight of Samuel when they said, give us a king to judge us. And Samuel prayed to the Lord. Verse 7, the Lord said to Samuel, listen to the voice of the people in regard to all that they say to you. For they, here's the key, they have not rejected you, Samuel, but they have rejected me. And this is God talking. They have rejected me from being king over them. Like all the deeds which they have done since the day that I brought them up from out of Egypt, even to this day, in that they have forsaken me and served other gods, so they are doing to you also. Now then, listen to their voice, verse 9. Listen to their voice. However, you shall solemnly warn them and tell them of all the procedure of the king who will reign over them. So this is a major change in the life of Israel. They have gone from relying on God directly through Moses, through Joshua, and then through the judges. And now they're saying, we want to appoint a king from among us that will rule us so that we can be like the other nations. So they are losing the peculiarity that God had given them, that had he had intended for them, that they would be different from all the other nations of the earth, in that they would serve the living Creator God, while the rest of the nations were worshiping their idols that they made with hands from wood and stone, that they would be the beacon of light to the world, that they would be a blessing to the world. But we see here that they failed in that. And not only did they fail in it, but they wanted to be just like the other nations. Give us a king, O God. Give us a king, Samuel. And God said to Samuel, they didn't reject you. They have rejected me. So God let them do it. And just very briefly, they had a king named Saul. And the kings, according to Jacob, when he blessed the 12 tribes, he said that if there would ever be kings, they would come from the tribe of Judah. But they picked Saul from the tribe of Benjamin because he was taller than all the other Israelites. He was better looking than all the other Israelites. In other words, he was a Hollywood model of a king, and that's what they wanted. It wasn't about the heart. It wasn't about God. It was about a man, and they wanted a man to lead them into battle. So God gave them that man, and of course it was a failure. Saul was a failure, and God took his Holy Spirit from Saul, and God appointed his own man. And when Samuel anointed David of the tribe of Judah, the son of Eli, the tribe of Judah, that he would be the first of the real king. So it starts with David, and that's the key point I want to make to you, that David is the line that Satan is now focusing on, because it looks like this seed of this woman is going to be somehow associated with the line of David. So let's see how God handles David, and we're going to do that by going to 2 Samuel. So in our next program, as we wrap up the teaching portion today and go into our Q&A, I want to leave you with 2 Samuel chapter 7, 2 Samuel chapter 7, verses 12 to 16. And we will be in there in our next program, and that's what's called the Davidic Covenant. And that's the passage that officially establishes the kingly line from which Christ would come. So therefore, that's going to be the focus of Satan, is where in this line can I jump in and I can stop this bloodline from continuing on so that I can stop this man from ever being born. So we'll continue there in our next program in 2 Samuel 7. We want to continue on today in our answering the question from Roger in Kingsport, what happens to unbelievers when they die? And over the last several programs, we've established that Hades is the place, and it's down, it's in the earth. We learned that from Ephesians chapter 4, when Christ went down before he descended before he ascended into heaven. And what he did when Jesus descended after his glorious resurrection, He went down into Hades, which was two compartments at that time, and that's the way it's described in the Bible. So we take it literally that there were two areas. One was for the punishment, the torment of unbelievers when they died, and the other portion across a gate, a great chasm, was the other portion of Hades, what was called Abraham's bosom, and that's where people who were counted as righteous in the Old Testament went when they died. And the reason they went there and not to heaven directly was because Jesus had not been crucified yet. They needed to have that perfect sacrifice, which had never been able to be accomplished, obviously, as we learn in Hebrews, had never been able to be accomplished by the priests in the temple, because that was the blood of goats. They needed a perfect sacrifice, and the only one that could do that was Jesus. So at the point in time when Jesus was crucified and shed his blood, then Jesus went down into Hades onto the good, the paradise side, and took all of those people to heaven. So from that point forward, which where we are today, for instance, Hades is for the unbeliever. Hades is for the unbeliever. And that is a place where they are held and have been held since the time of Cain, who slew Abel in the Old Testament. He's there, and all the others are there waiting. Then we tried to establish through the scriptures, and we went to Matthew 25. And if we could, let's go in the New Testament to the first book of the New Testament, the Gospel of Matthew, and go to Matthew 25. And perhaps you already know by now that Matthew 24 and Matthew 25 are together. They make up what's called the Olivet Discourse, which is when Jesus was talking to James and John and Peter and Andrew, the two sets of brothers, up on the Mount of Olives talking about the temple. And he was basically criticizing Israel and telling them, because you focused so much on Israel, and by the way, the apostles were representatives of Israel. It wasn't that they didn't believe in Christ, but Israel didn't, that he said, I'm going to tear this down. I'm going to tear down this physical edifice called the temple, and I'm going to raise up myself. I will be the new temple, and it will be people who will be part of that temple will those who profess me as the Son of God, Jesus, the Son of the living God. But those who don't are going to go for a period of time. I'm going to turn my back on Israel for a period, which has now been 2,000 years, and then I will come to them again and offer the kingdom to them, but not before they go through the tribulation. So that's what the Olivet Discourse is, and Matthew 25 is part of that. So in 24, he talks about the tribulation and his second coming. And then in 25, and specifically starting in verse 31, he talks about his coming and to sit as the judge for those who have made it through the tribulation in their carnal bodies. So you have Jews that have made it through the tribulation, and you have Gentiles. So he's judging the Gentiles in Matthew 25, 31, where it says that when he comes, he will sit on his glorious throne, and then it talks about him judging. And I want to go specifically to verse 41, and it says there, then he will also say to those on his left, these that he's going to judge as unrighteous, depart from me, accursed ones, into the eternal fire, which has been prepared for the devil and his angels. So the point we made here in Matthew 25, that when God created this eternal fire, lake of fire, that it was done for the devil and his angels because they fell first and God established it. But he also allowed man in his free will to make a choice that when this fallen angel, Satan, came to them and tempted them in the garden, he gave them the free will to choose God and God's way or to choose Satan and his way. So basically, the lake of fire and as a consequence, Hades, where they are held today before they go to the lake of fire, all that was created for Satan and his angels, not for mankind, but because mankind chose to follow the beguiling ways of Satan in the garden. And from then on, it's a place for us as well. We had this point about it being for Satan and his angels confirmed in 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 4, where it talks about it's a place where Hades is a place where the angels are currently in that temporary period, that temporary place, waiting judgment. And then they, as well as all of unrepentant, unrighteous mankind, will stand before Jesus at the great white throne and then will be placed in the lake of fire. And we wanted to go to Jude to confirm again. Jude, which is a one-chapter book right at the beginning before Revelation starts. So it's right between 3rd John. There's 1st, 2nd, 3rd John, then Jude, and then Revelation. So if you can find that little one-chapter book, it's only 25 verses, and go to Jude and then go to verse 6. And it says in Jude, verse 6, the angels who did not keep their own domain, but abandoned their proper abode, he has kept in eternal bonds under darkness for the judgment of the great day. So he's talking about the judgment of the great white throne, and he's saying that these angels who did not keep their proper abode, he's referring to the angels who came in to women prior to the flood, the great flood of Noah, and basically tried to contaminate the entire DNA that God had established, not only for the human race, but also for animal kind, because he destroyed through the flood everything that had breath in its nostrils, because Satan had attempted to destroy all of that, to pollute it with his DNA, with his seed. So God destroyed it and only saved Noah and his particular family. Okay, we have once again run out of time. Don't you wish this was an hour program? I do, because it goes so fast. But we need to look next at the great day, and we're going to do that by going to the book of Luke next time during our Q&A. So remember, if we don't talk again, I'll be seeing you in the air.
You've been listening to Exploring Bible Prophecy with our host and teacher, Steve Butler. For more information on this or any of the Exploring Bible Prophecy programs, visit whcbradio.org. Exploring Bible Prophecy is a production of WHCB Radio.